is Cashing Out on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
All right, hour number two on Cashing Out right here on VSiN. Mark Melusis with you, and we're going to go to the progressive guest line and welcome aboard a buddy of mine, Dave Sharapan, Bostonian versus the book, a veteran Vegas odds maker, joins the program now. Dave, good evening. How are you?
Moose, I'm great. Good to talk to you. Usually I'm talking to you, you know, early morning Vegas time, and, you know, you're right in the middle of your day back east. We've kind of reversed roles right now. I'm in like post prime time, post game, you know, and it's late night for you back east. This is kind of cool.
Yes, it is late night for me, and it's I'm the only one up in the house, and now you and your daughter's playing a little PS5 as we're talking a little sports here and reacting to game two of the NBA Finals right here on VSiN. What was your, you know, the Thunder cover easily. They were 11.5-point favorite. They win the game by 16. The game goes over. Any reaction to game two before we get your thoughts on the line for game three, where Oklahoma City is only a 5-point favorite Wednesday night back in Indianapolis?
Thought the game went exactly as I expected. I was on shows all week, you know, or the last couple of days anyway, talking about OKC winning this game and covering. So it worked out well. Not surprised by the number at all. Really, anything, it had to be 4 minimum, and an initial bump maybe up to 4.5 or 5 makes perfect sense to me. Indiana did something almost impossible in game one. For them to replicate it again in game two, pretty tough. Now we'll see when we go back to Indiana for game three in a venue change. I think a lot of people will be on Indiana again come game three, but the total's perfect. I mean, it took down to the last, you know, two possessions to get over the total. That's an easy one for odds makers, but just throw it back up.
Yeah, no, and you're not surprised. There seemed to be a little that maybe Oklahoma City should have been or should be in game three, Dave, you know, even a more decisive favorite. You know, they were 11.5-point favorite going into game two. They were home. Now they're going on the road. They're only anywhere from a 4.5 to 5-point favorite. That's not surprised to you. You think the number is right for game three?
Yeah, it's an automatic take if you give the bad guys a 6 with the home team with Indiana. There's no way the number, if any books get to a 6, you can immediately expect a limit play at 6. 2 possessions by 3s or 3 possessions by 2s, which nobody seems to take anymore. I mean, that's another takeaway from the game. I mean, or just from the finals in general. The mid-range jumper is gone. That's it. There's no more. It's a layup or a 3. It's got to be more than 4, less than 6. So we settle in 4.5, 5. It might tick up a little bit, but I can guarantee you by point for, you know, the sophisticated money, we like to say, guaranteed at 6.
You know, Dave, I get a sneaky sense that I don't think Indiana's done in these NBA playoffs, you know, with and they're going to be desperate on Wednesday night. What about how the rest of this series plays out? Obviously, the Thunder right now back up to being a minus 570 favorite to win this series. We know they are the better basketball team. That doesn't really strike fear in the hearts of Indiana. Halliburton's got to get going for the Pacers. Do you think that game one is the outlier and you could see Oklahoma City winning this in 5 games, or do you think the Pacers are going to make the Thunder sweat in the series?
I think books are rooting for this, that the Pacers need to win another game. Nobody wants to see OKC win 3 in a row. Books don't. I don't think bettors do. Whether it's game 3 or 4, I would have to think Indiana gets one more. And then, you know, we can go back to OKC 2-2. OKC wins game 5 and then somehow wins game 6 on the road. OKC in 6 seems like the most likely scenario to me right now. The most bet on thing was OKC in 5. That doesn't always mean that it gets there. But there's probably a lot of people listening to this show or watching that would think, yeah, let's get that you know, four in a row parlay home. I don't think it happens, Bruce. I wish we could get as good of a series as we get in the NHL with the Stanley Cup. I mean, you know, that series is, feels like it can't go nothing but six or seven. This one feels like it will be really hard-pressed to make it past six.
You know, and we're chatting with Dave Sharapan on Cashing Out on this Sunday night right here on VSiN. Mark Melusis with you. Dave, you hit upon it. Let's move ahead to Game 3 of the Stanley Cup Finals tomorrow night back down in Sunrise on Monday evening. Series tied up at a game apiece. The Panthers are home. They're a minus 138 favorite. If you like McDavid and Draisaitl, you're getting plus 115 to bounce back after the Game 2 loss in overtime with Marchand the game winner. Who do you like in Game 3? Where's your lean Game 3? And who do you like in the series?
I got Florida before the series, and I'm sticking with Florida as being the team that's going to win this series. But I said it before the series, I thought they would split in Edmonton, and then they would split when they came back to Florida. I'll stick to this. Florida's going to win Game 3. And whether – I don't think it's going to go to overtime again. I really, two unbelievable hockey games. And as hockey guys, you, me, whoever else may be listening, it's an absolute dream to watch. Highly skilled teams just going back and forth against each other. Goaltending has been exceptional. The referees have kind of stayed out of it for the most part, awarding power plays when necessary, but not overdoing it. It's been absolutely perfect. It all leads to another over game. One of these games is going under. I don't think it's Game 3. I like Florida. I like over. It might take an empty netter this time, though. Not an empty netter in a team to score to tie it. An empty netter to go ahead and win this thing by two. The puck line has been just treacherous for people. Usually, earlier in the rounds, you could lay a goal and a half and get the empty netter and cover it. Not now. Not in this series.
You think this has seven games written all over it, Dave?
I will be shocked if it doesn't go. I think it's six for sure. And yes, I think it's going seven. One way or the other, they're going to get there. Very different route than last year. Three for one team, three for the next team, and then, you know, get to game seven. Obviously, I think we're trading wins here. One, 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 one. And then we'll see what happens game five. Edmonton wins at home, Florida wins at game six, and we do it all again in game seven at Edmonton.
That would be crushing for the Canadian hockey fan. You go back home for a game seven in Edmonton. The Canadian team has not won a Stanley Cup since 1993. It's McDavid and Draisaitl, and you got Sharapan all over the Florida Panthers.
I know. I mean, but Edmonton feels different this year. I mean, they really do. Like, them getting that goal, I mean, Chris Perry's 40 years old, or Corey Perry's 40 years old, and got that goal. He's been a force all playoffs. They never would have gotten that goal in the past, right? Like, just to get tied and then play that thing out. Skinner's answering every question that everyone has. They feel different. It would not surprise me to see them actually win a game seven. It would behoove them most to not have to play a game seven. Get this thing done in six.
We're talking to Dave Sharapan. It is Cashing Out right here on VSiN. Dave does a great job, Bostonian versus the book. Check him out there. Dave, you know, I closed out last segment talking about Rodgers to the Steelers. And, you know, I've known you a while. I know you're a huge Steeler fan, and you know the NFL backwards and forwards. What's your take on Aaron Rodgers landing with the team that you grew up rooting for in Pittsburgh and the Steelers?
It's the least surprising thing in sports in the NFL offseason, in my opinion. It should have happened 2 months ago, but it happened. I can tell you this, not one number moved anywhere. Season wins, odds to win a division, odds to win the AFC, odds to win the Super Bowl, nothing moved. Now that means because it was baked into the number already. It was anticipated. Odds makers, you kind of make a move before a move and you think, all right, if Rodgers goes there, what is the number? That's what it is. I hope he plays enough games to make an impact and possibly get them close to the playoffs. No question, Moose, they are still the third best team in the division. Baltimore's better. Cincinnati's better, at least right now in my eyes. So does that mean the Steelers get 10 wins? Boy, that would be a huge success. Huge. 8 or 9 is the number. When you go through the schedule, week 10, they play at the Chargers in LA. After that game, if Rodgers isn't healthy, and when has he been healthy late in the season, the Steelers are going to be in trouble, and they may finally go under 500.
Dave, you're the best, man. You are the best. I love talking sports with you. I love talking gambling with you. Love talking a little Steeler football with you. I appreciate the time tonight, Dave.
Thank you, Moose. Pirates tomorrow. First 3-game winning streak of the year. Pirates tomorrow. Small favorite at home against the Marlins. Have a good night.
There you go. An added pick from Dave Sharapan from Bostonian versus the book. Gotta love that. Want to know where your money and all the money is really going? Unlike other sources, our betting splits come straight from Circa and DraftKings Sportsbooks, giving you the insight and the info where the sharp money action is landing. Circa is known for taking big bets from professional bettors, while DraftKings provides a broader market perspective. That means you're getting the real action, not just public money, but the kind of wagers that move lines. See the percentage of bets against the percentage of handle on every game across every major sport, helping you make smarter, more informed bets. Get VSiN's exclusive betting splits for as little as $9.99 for your first month at VSiN.com/subscribe. This is Cashing Out. Mark Melusis with you on this Sunday night right here on VSiN.
Welcome back to Cashing Out here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
It is Cashing Out on this Sunday. Mark Melusis with you right here on VSiN. Let's hit the progressive guest line once again. Justin Vensterman joins us, Sirius XM fantasy sports radio host, NBA analyst for Fantasy Guru, a good buddy of mine as well, going back a ways. Justin, good to see you, brother. How are you?
Moose, it's great being with you. Thanks so much for having me.
You got it. What's your reaction to what we saw Sunday night out in Oklahoma City, the Thunder with the decisive victory? They were a heavy favorite going into it as 11.5-point favorite. They win the game by 16. The game goes over. What's your reaction to what we saw game two? And then we'll look ahead toward game three Wednesday night back in Indy.
Just wasn't surprised. More of what I think we're going to see for the remainder of this series, Moose, and that's that everything that Indiana has, I keep saying this on various shows, everything that Indiana has brings to the table offensively, defensively. OKC is just better. But the thing with Indiana is, as we've seen from them, the resiliency and the fact that they're like little gnats, little bugs. They just don't go away. They never go away no matter what. You really have to put them away, and the Thunder didn't do that as other teams didn't throughout the playoffs. But in this game, what you just saw was the Thunder have that control, and I think we're going to start to see more of that as the series progresses. The one thing that really stood out to me, though, was I was kind of shocked that Indiana just pulled their starters with about four and a half minutes to go. You'd think in a very fast-paced environment, especially with the quick offense Indiana can put together, you hit a few threes very quickly, all of a sudden it's a game again. I think they gave up on the game too soon.
Yeah, that's fair, you know, but never got a sense that that magical run was happening Sunday night for Indiana. Yeah. You know, never did. You know, Halliburton was strange the way that he played the game offensively. Give credit to Lou Dort and the Oklahoma City defense, and it is an exquisite defense. But he finished with 17, 12 in the fourth, but really was not all that impactful. You know, they didn't outshoot Oklahoma City from behind the three-point arc. They did a better job with the turnover margin in game two as compared to game one. They didn't win the rebounding advantage. You know, it was a strange game for Indiana, who now did what they had to do, even up this series at a game apiece, going back home for a game three. But I agree with you. I just never got a sense that miraculous comeback was happening last night, Justin.
Yeah, no, and they did look kind of flat. Still, again, it's the championship, good offense. They've shot themselves back into games. The Thunder are on another level compared to some of the other teams they've played defensively, especially. They're the best ever, or the best ever. Wow, I shouldn't say that. The best of the season, at least for this season. But at the same time, that's how good the Oklahoma City team is when it comes to their defense slowing you down a bit, getting to those gaps, which they did. And that's going to be a big problem for them, the ball denial from Tyrese Haliburton, getting it out of his hands. And one of the other things I saw that they did was, as Andrew Nembhard was starting to heat up a little bit early, they got the ball out of his hands. So the adjustments that Oklahoma City makes throughout the game, I think that's going to be too much for Indiana to overcome. And I'll say this, Moose, I saw what the spread is already for next game. 5-point spread here, and I know why it's so down. It's because Indiana doesn't lose back-to-back postseason games. I think that changes next game.
Yeah, so you like, in Oklahoma City is a 5-point favorite Wednesday night back in Indy. The total is sitting right around 228, which has been a solid number. Went under game one, went over in game number two. You think of what we saw Sunday night in Oklahoma City, we're going to see that the rest of this series, Justin?
Yes, and look, I thought Indiana could take a game. The way they did it, though, in game one, I was not expecting that. And I don't want to doubt Indiana and their offensive ability, but for them to win this game, they're going to have to shoot 50% from the field, because Oklahoma City is going to keep coming at them. They can outpace them. They can outspeed them when it comes to their offense, transition offense as well. Indiana has done a great job throughout the postseason in getting back. But Oklahoma City has a bunch of versatile options that they could go to, guys that can handle the rock, drive it themselves, kick it back out. Whoever draws the double, they're always finding someone open. They're very in sync with each other. And what we saw tonight, I think it's going to be too much for Indiana to handle. Now, do I think that Indiana can maybe steal another game from this series? Yes, but I've been Thunder all the way in five or six. I actually have a bet on both five or six that I put before the series started, because I thought with Indiana's offense, and if let's say Oklahoma City has a really, really poor shooting night where they just don't show up, which we saw the last couple of series from them in the game, then Indiana steals another game from them. But at the end of the day, Moose, these two teams, they match up really well, but Oklahoma City is deeper. They're better. They're more skilled. Their defense is better. And I think that's what's going to put them over the top ultimately.
And the Thunder are a -560 favorite, back up to being a -560 favorite to go out there and win this series. I want to look ahead to the prop market, game three, Justin, because you're great at this. Anything that you're looking to take advantage of as those markets have opened up, looking ahead to three nights from tonight, Wednesday night back in Indy, when this series gets going back again?
Something to watch, Isaiah Hartenstein. While he doesn't play a lot of minutes, I love the fact that he's coming off the bench. You're separating him and Holmgren a little bit, meaning he's going to have rebounding chances. And he's very efficient with his playing time, and he's a very big-time volume rebounder. And it's been hard for the Pacers to really keep him out of the lane. And I actually was able to hit a parlay tonight that I put together where I pretty much altered down his rebounds along with both Jalen Williams and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. And that's something that I'm going to once again look to do, because in a fast-paced situation in a matchup like this, Moose, where the speed is just extreme, you're going to get a lot of shots up, meaning that the rebounding ceilings are going to rise, especially unless both of these teams are shooting 55% or above, then the rebounds aren't going to be as plentiful. But if you have even one of these teams not shooting as well, the rebounding ceilings are going to go way up for these teams, kind of as we saw a little bit tonight with Indiana, a little bit down when it came to their shooting percentage. So I think that an area we can look at again, Hartenstein, if he's playing even 17 to 19 minutes off the bench, I doubt we'll have any books that have 6.5. 7.5, though, is something that I think he could still go over. I think he could hit 8 or 9. That's what I'm anticipating it to be. However, tomorrow morning, I will look once again. If any of the books go down to 6.5, I'm hitting that immediately. Even if it's heavily juiced, I'll just up the investment, because I think even in 17 to 19 minutes, 7 rebounds shouldn't be a problem for him.
Anything when you're looking at the player points, you know, SGA, I think his total is set at 34.5. You look at a better performance game two from both Chet Holmgren, Jalen Williams from a Thunder perspective. You look at Haliburton, his total for game three is set at 17.5. You would expect win or lose, you're going to get a lot more aggressive Tyrese Haliburton on Wednesday night back at home.
Yes, but I keep thinking one thing, Moose, and that's I don't want to go too crazy with the Haliburton points. It's something Anthony Edwards said when he was facing them. And Anthony Edwards, one of the things that he said was Oklahoma City was very good at closing down that lane quickly. And if Halliburton's not going to get the high percentage shots, you're going to see him as more of a traditional point guard where he's pass, 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 and he's not taking a lot of shots until he can finally find some openings. He's not going to force it. And I worry about that because if he's not able to drive, I don't know how he's going to be able to really hammer that over. So I could see him. You would think that at some point, especially if Oklahoma City is up double figures most of the game, that Halliburton would just have to, with reckless abandonment, just take a bunch of shots. That is possible, but that's going to be a big time sweat. So Moose, don't go to the gym that day because we're going to be all schwitzing for that one.
Well, I don't go to the gym enough. My wife tells me that all the time, Justin. So
my wife tells me it every day too. We're one and the same.
Anything else you like, Hartenstein? I love that play for game three. Anything else that strikes your fancy? I know you're going to dig and you got plenty of time before Wednesday night, but anything else that hits you from a prop perspective?
So you mentioned Chet Holmgren. So a couple of nights ago, I was looking at his points. It was at 16 and a half and he didn't go over. He wasn't able to hit a shot. Then it went down a couple of points to 14 and a half. And if it's there once again, fine with Chet Holmgren. I think he's going to get a lot of high percentage shots. I actually, Moose, thought going into this series, the big X factor matchup was that Siakam versus Holmgren matchup, especially because the Pacers hadn't seen Holmgren yet this season. So I thought Holmgren was going to be very tough for them to defend, but he wasn't hitting shots. He was kind of schemed out after that. But then what you saw him, you started to see him light it up again mid-game, and I think that we could definitely see that. And then on the other side, I just can't quit this guy, and that's Andrew Nembhard for the Pacers because, okay, man, if he didn't miss those free throws, then he would have gotten over the 11.5-point mark that he was at. I am praying that it goes down to 10.5, which I think is entirely possible because if you look at the grand scheme of his last number of games, he hasn't gone over that 11.5 a lot. So if it goes down to 10.5, Moose, I am going to be looking at that over once again. He's an efficient shooter. I was shocked that he only took 8 shots, but I think that goes up next game.
And you get a sense here quickly, Justin, that game one's going to prove to be the outlier in this series, right?
Yeah, I do. And I just think that the Pacers got their game here. I think they could potentially win one more, but I'm really feeling OKC in that -5 for game three.
Fensty, Justin Fensterman, SiriusXM Fantasy Sports Radio host, NBA analyst for Fantasy Guru. Justin, thanks for the time tonight. Appreciate it, bud.
Thanks so much, Moose. It's great seeing you again.
You as well. This is Cashing Out. Mark Melusis with you right here on VSiN.
VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
All right, it is Cashing Out on this Sunday night right here. Mark Melusis with you on VSiN as the Oklahoma City Thunder take game two of the NBA Finals, 123-107, the final. We'll hear from the Thunder head coach and Pascal Siakam momentarily here. If you didn't tune in last night or didn't watch the game on ABC, well, I mean, it was in Oklahoma City basically after they went back and forth a little bit in the opening quarter in terms of exchanging leads. Oklahoma City led by 6 after the opening quarter, never trailed again. They led by 6 after the opening quarter. They led by 18 at the break and kind of played even in the second half. They win the game by 17. And it was kind of a win the game by 16. It was a decisive Oklahoma City win. They cover the spread of 11.5. They go over the total sitting at 228.5 as well. Went under in game number one. And really, you look at Oklahoma City, they played like a desperate basketball team last night. I don't think there's any question about that. Their stars came to play. When you look at SGA, finished with 34 points. They got a tremendous performance from Wiggins off the bench. He had 18 on the night, including 5 of 8 from behind the arc. Caruso gave you 20. Their secondary and tertiary stars, when you're looking at their starting lineup, and you're looking at Jalen Williams, he dropped in 19, and Chet Holmgren, he had 15 after two subpar performances from those two starters for their head coach, Mark Dagnall, in game number one, but they came to play last night. They played like a desperate team. They were better on the glass. They out-rebounded the Indiana Pacers. They shot them even. 14 made threes for Indiana, 14 made threes for Oklahoma City. That's what you want. They shot a little bit better than the Pacers from the field, 48 to 45%. Indiana didn't turn over the basketball with reckless abandon, but you know that wasn't really an issue in game number one, as the Indiana Pacers stole them game number one and rallied from 15 points down. I think what you saw from the Thunder is basically what everyone expected or anticipated when this series got going, when Oklahoma City was nearly a 7-1 favorite, right up there going into these NBA finals, and no one really gave Indiana much of a chance. And then all of a sudden, you know, they did to Oklahoma City in game one what they did to Milwaukee and what they did to the Cleveland Cavaliers and what they did to the New York Knicks in game one of the Eastern Conference Finals. They did it in game one of the NBA Finals. And so last night, you got what you expected. I thought the Thunder would respond. That's exactly what they did. Here's their head coach, Mark Dagnall, post-game, talking about the difference between game one and two.
Indiana's kind of an acquired taste. You know, we haven't played them a ton. They're not the West, obviously, and they play a very distinct style on both ends. And I thought there were a lot of things tonight that we were just like a little better in and more comfortable. And that was on both ends of the floor. I just thought the guys did a good job of just improving, which is important going from game one to game two.
Yeah, they learned. I mean, I think that's basically what their head coach said. I think they've learned throughout the course of these NBA playoffs. We know how talented they are. We know how good they are defensively, historically great. We know how great they were during the course of the regular season. I think they've grown up in these NBA playoffs. I think the Denver Nuggets series, where they were forced to seven games, that experience, I think, is going to serve them well, throughout the course of these NBA finals against the Indiana Pacers. The interesting aspect is that from a Pacer perspective is game two Sunday night out in Oklahoma City was not a game they had to win. Oklahoma City had to win it. Now, are the Thunder the better team? Are they the more talented team? Do they have more solutions? There's no question about it. They do. That's why they're as decided a favorite in this series as they are. But the Pacers will go back home for game three Wednesday night, and they're going to be a 5-point underdog at home. That's the line that has already been set. This total is sitting at 228. The Thunder are sitting as a minus 570 favorite to win this series. Everybody is back to where they were before this series started after the stunning Indiana Pacer rally from 15 points down in game one, thinking that this is the Oklahoma City's series to lose. And in all likelihood, that is probably the case. But the Pacers did what they had to do in Oklahoma City. They had to split the first two games. Now they have home court advantage. Now they go back home for a game three. Even though they're an underdog in the game, you expected that because of the dominance of Oklahoma City statistically and in the win-loss column and the lack of belief when you're looking at Indiana, and clearly the Western Conference stronger than the Eastern Conference. With all that being said, you look at Oklahoma City and you're looking at their home and road splits, the Thunder are by far a more dominant team at home, and you saw that last night as compared to where they are on the road. Look at early on in the playoffs. Look at, you know, the 40-plus point loss in Minnesota. Look at the fact that they dropped 2 of 3 on the road in Denver. Now they go to Indiana, and the Pacers, as Hubie Brown used to always talk about, you know, when you are home, your bench players, your role players are going to play 10 to 15% better than they do on the road. Yes, do you need a more aggressive Tyrese Halliburton moving forward? No question about it. Can they win this series or make Oklahoma City sweat if they're even in terms of point production behind the three-point arc? They cannot. Do they have to do a better job on the glass? Yes, they do. Do they have to contain the turnovers? For sure. But the turnovers have not killed them in this series because the Oklahoma City Thunder have not been able to take those turnovers and put points up on the scoreboard. But the Pacers go back home. They have a little bit of time to lick their wounds, learn from what they witnessed and what they went through in game two on Sunday night in Oklahoma City. And there's still a lot of belief for the Indiana Pacers. Here's Pascal Siakam, who came off a subpar performance, as did many in Indiana Pacer in game two on Sunday night. about what the Pacers learned game two and looking ahead to game three.
They've been aggressive. Like, they've been super aggressive on Tyrese for sure, but on everyone. I mean, they're ball pressuring. We got to be stronger with the ball. We got to find ways to still be aggressive and attack. And again, yeah, no, I think they're just being super aggressive. And I think it's not just Ty. I think it's everyone.
Yeah, and I think that's what Oklahoma City does. I mean, they're going to be aggressive defensively. They're going to be aggressive. They're going to make you uncomfortable. And Indiana has had a propensity of doing that to their opponents, putting them in uncomfortable positions. Heck, we saw that in game one against Oklahoma City, and we saw them be able to rally from 15 points down. So now the question is, how does Indiana, going back home, make this a series where Gate proved that game one is not just an outlier, but may make Oklahoma City really sweat and maybe put this series in doubt a little bit? I think it's going to take a lot. I don't think there's any doubt about it. And I like Halliburton. I like Carlisle. You know, Siakam's been a wonderful player. He really has, whether it be in Toronto or whether it be in Indiana. I think it's going to take a really good shooting performance. I think they can't go 14 for 40 from behind the arc. They got to do a better job taking care of the basketball. Although I think it's a given when you go up against Oklahoma City, given how aggressive and how good their defense is, you're going to turn the basketball over anywhere between 12 to 15 times. But when those turnovers happen, are they helping lengthen out a run? Are they turning into easy points? Are they dead ball turnovers, or are they turnovers in action that leads to a fast break the other way? Like, those are all things that come into play with Indiana, but the Pacers are going to have to do a better job on the glass. Dagnall has made an adjustment here in terms of at times splitting up his two bigs, but you saw in game two him playing Hartenstein and Holmgren together to have a decided advantage on the glass. And I think you saw Oklahoma City go to work after their game one loss. Now the reaction is for Rick Carlisle and his coaching staff and this Indiana Pacer team is going to be a case of what they do game three back home. I think the easy advantage, that's why I asked Justin Fensterman the question about Tyrese Halliburton. If you look at his point total set for game three, it's set at 17.5 points. He finished with 17 in game number two. And the early burn, it's juice to the under right now. I think to me, the play, if you don't like Indiana in the game, and I get it, you don't, they're going to be the more desperate team. Oklahoma City is the more talented team, even though the Thunder have been better at home and more dominant at home as compared to on the road. I think the play for Indiana, if you're looking at a player prop or a point total prop, would be Halliburton over 17.5 points. Because even with how aggressive Oklahoma City is defensively, even though they're trying to make him uncomfortable, and even though Anthony Edwards and Fensty brought up the idea of Anthony Edwards going out there and making the smart basketball play and maybe not taking as many shots as he normally does, I think Halliburton, as he opts on that flight tonight to head back home, is going to say to himself, I've got to be a more aggressive and set the tone for my franchise. I am the head of the stake. I'm the one that makes this thing go. I think he's going to have himself a game on Wednesday night. The question is, even if Tyrese Halliburton has himself a game, is that going to be good enough for them to go out there and win game three? Different betting on sports. Why not try the races? First Bet lets you wager on hundreds of horse races every single day from top tracks around the U.S. and around the world. Sign up for firstbet.com. Firstbet.com. That's the number one, stbet.com. Use promo code VSIN200 to claim 20% rebate for your first 60 days, up to $200. Head to firstbet.com today. Coming up, we'll talk a little bit of baseball. Connor Mack will join the program. Look ahead to all the Monday action, reaction to the Sunday that was as well, including the Sunday night game as the Red Sox took care of business of the Yankees in the Bronx. We'll do that next. This is Cashing Out on this Sunday night. Mark Melusis with you right here on VSiN.
VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
It is cashing out. Mark Melusis with you on this Sunday night. All the baseball action highlighted by the game, the Sunday night game, which was the Yankees as a heavy -225 favorite, taking on the Boston Red Sox. And the Red Sox having their way, despite two home runs from Aaron Judge. Boston has their way and knocks off the Yankees 11-7. So the over cashes in the game. If you like the Boston Red Sox in the game, that obviously cashed as well. And you know, I think obviously when you look at it, it's the one of the best interesting weekend of Major League Baseball. The Mets having their way with the Colorado Rockies. You have Clayton Kershaw getting upset with the St. Louis Cardinals and some of the videos that they're playing out there in St. Louis. And then you get what I believe is, you know, one of the greatest rivalries in all of sports, and that's the Yankees and Sox. A little Sunday night. Give Boston a little bit of credit. And maybe this is something, you know, moving forward here that is able to kind of jettison or vault the Boston Red Sox forward here, because they've not had a particularly good year. You know, you look at Boston on the season, they're three games under the 500 mark. It's been mired in drama and talking about some prospects getting called up from time to time. But it's a Boston team that has not been particularly good, and it's been frustrating to a lot of Red Sox fans. But they came into this series against the Yankees, and they were trailing the Yankees by 9.5 games in the American League East. They come out of it trailing the Yankees by 8.5, but they take 2 of 3 from the Bombers after, you know, and what we saw on, you know, Saturday, and then what we saw on Saturday night on the Fox game, and then what we saw on Sunday night, and their bats came alive. They fell behind early in the game last night, 2-0, were able to rally from that point forward. I think it's a Yankee team that is interesting in a lot of different ways. I think number one, it's a Yankee team that, you know, I think is a good baseball team that doesn't have to be great now in order to be great later. And let me explain what I mean by that. I think when you're looking at Major League Baseball, and especially when you're looking at the complexion of the American League and you're looking at some of these matchups day in and day out, what you do know this is that the National League is extremely top heavy with the talent, and with the Mets and the Phillies. You look at the Chicago Cubs, obviously the National League West with the Dodgers, the Giants, and the Padres, even the Arizona Diamondbacks, you know, and they suffered a significant loss with Corbin Burns. But the National League is significantly more talented and a lot deeper with teams that are not only playoff contenders, but teams that obviously could potentially down the line win a World Series with a move or two here at the MLB trade deadline. When you look at the American League, it's really not the case. You know, the Yankees are not a great baseball team right now. They're okay. They don't necessarily need to be great. The American League East is not particularly good. I don't think there's a massive sweat factor, even though the Yankee lead in the American League East is down to just 4.5 games. It's really the Yankees and the Tigers. That's basically about it when you look at the complexion of it. But give the Red Sox credit. They were really good last night up in the Bronx, and they took care of business. And they took care of business against the New York Yankees. Let's talk a little baseball. Connor Mack is joining the program right now. Pub Sports Radio and a handicapper, and talk a little baseball. Hey, Connor, Mark Melusis with you right here on Cashing Out on VSiN. Thanks for the time tonight.
Oh, anytime, Mark. Appreciate it. How you doing?
I'm doing well, Connor. I'm doing well. You know, before we look ahead to Monday, what was your reaction to what we saw on the MLB scene over the course of the weekend? I was just recapping a little bit of what we saw in the Bronx in the Sunday night game as the Red Sox win it, despite falling behind early, despite two home runs by Aaron Judge. Give Boston credit. Maybe they can use this as a little bit of a jumping off point, revitalize their season. I think that might be a little bit of a stretch. But what's your take on what we saw this weekend for Major League Baseball?
A few things. We will touch on that in just a minute. Big game with tomorrow, Rays, Red Sox. A couple that are big for tomorrow, the Atlanta Braves. I thought getting swept, just not being able to find ways to score runs there against a team in San Francisco that's been struggling to score as well, even at home. And a little bit, the Braves have shown cracks with their bullpen. So they have Chris Sale on the mound tomorrow against the Brewers. So I think that will be a big one. And the classic, I thought this weekend, the biggest, Pirates finally wins the baseball games here. Excellent, great 2-1 game. I love baseball games like that. So I loved it. And the Dodgers kind of getting away with one in shambles a little bit with just the injuries to the pitching that they've had to deal with even to, you know, a bunch of their hitters, but pitching and more pitching, and they have so much of it. But it's just, you always can need more. I always say that you always can need more pitching, and they've struggled consistently in St. Louis. I'm sure you've known this over the years. The Dodgers to get one out of there is pretty good. That's always one circle for me, when the Dodgers head to St. Louis. I love to be on the Cardinals.
You know, Connor, if you're looking at the futures market in the American League, there's a lot of ways to go in the National League. Is it just the Yankees and the Tigers? Is there another team that you'd be interested in that you think can get better and be dangerous when we get to the second half of the season?
I really think that's it. You know, I want to get to – we've seen this, such a big fall off, kind of a little bit of the American League East with the Orioles. Just really bad. Talk about a team with no pitching. And then when the bats go cold, everything's just gone south for such a young team. I think they have a little bit here as of late. I think winners is 6-8. I think they play a lot better, but they need it now, you know, right now, right before the break to get going. But I think that's it. I like the Rays, but I don't like them enough in a wild card. And I think the Yankees are the team, but I think there's flaws with them. And we saw that last year in the World Series. I still don't think they're great defensively. They've looked a little bit better to start the year. And that lineup is so top-heavy, a little bit like the Dodgers. It's so key for the bottom of the order of a team like that to get going. It's massive because they're just so stacked up front.
We're chatting with Connor Mack from Pub Sports Radio. All right, Connor, let's look ahead to the Monday MLB slate. Let's start with the Red Sox coming off taking 2-3 from the Yankees as they take on Tampa. What's your take on Red Sox and Rays?
Yeah, I think this is a really good spot. You just talked about right earlier when you were talking about the Red Sox. Big win. Bats have come alive. I think this is the ultimate flat spot. We always talked about a little bit Sunday baseball. I'm sure you've heard it. As long as you feel good, this just isn't it. Division rival. Rays have kind of gotten them a bunch, not lately, a little bit even the last couple years. They've only played one series this year. Red Sox took 2-3. They have Bale on the mound, who his last few starts have been pretty good. You know, even his last one was a quality start where he gave up 3 runs. My problem with him is his command and his walks. It's just a really issue. And I think this is a setup great for the Rays, who have won 5 of 6. 7 of the last 10, starting to play better. The shambles of having to play, you know, not really in their home ballpark and everything there, and a bunch of road games to start out. And maybe that helped them going out on the road because they were losing. It seemed like home game after home game in that small ballpark. But I think they match up great in this spot, the Rays do, is the left hand is in this lineup. And they've already seen Bale has gotten ripped before by these Rays. 30 for 84. They're in 357 off him. He's had some bad outings. And you know what his problem is traditionally? Lefties. And I love that. This is why the Rays have started to get going too. Josh Lowe's been back. Josh Lau. Aranda's been really, really good. Caminero, this young third baseman, has been excellent. And that's been his issue the last 3 years. 292, 262 against lefties. And 313. So I think he's going to have some issues with this Rays lineup. I love the price after Sunday Night Baseball. His biggest thing is keep the ball in the ballpark. He has given up the long ball, and we know that could be a problem with this Red Sox team. We just saw Devers go Yard or Abreu, and then they could get going. But I love this spot for the Rays tomorrow. Team playing very fundamental baseball, and they have the better bullpen. You know, usually I kind of look first five. I love taking that in baseball. But when I have the better pen, not that the Red Sox bullpen's been awful. They've been pretty decent. But I like the pen for the Rays. So full game, just about even money here for the Rays tomorrow.
All right, we have about a minute left here, Connor. How about Dodgers and Padres, May and Pivetta? Series gets going Monday night out in San Diego.
Yeah, this is always a classic spot for me. I want this under when I first look at this here with 8. I always like to do a little bit more digging, and we're off a Sunday into a Monday. I always like to look at the umpires a little bit when I'm on a total, especially on unders, and we're switching, you know, kind of days, cities here. But both teams traveling here, Dodgers from St. Louis, we talked about them getting a win, the bats finally come alive, and then losing. San Diego gets a big win, but the Machado homer just seems like a sleepy spot. I can't trust Pivetta. here a little bit in this spot. He's been very, very good, excellent at home. I'm worried he could get hit. But when I see these two teams, as of the last 2 years, there's been a lot of runs scored. But when I think of this late night, I think of an under, you know, in this spot.
Under.
And Padres, being Padres.
Padres in the under. Connor Mack, Pub Beautiful. Sports Radio. Connor, thanks for the time tonight. Appreciate it.
Thanks so much, Mark. Appreciate it, man.
You got it. It is cashing out on this Sunday night. Mark Melusis with you right here on VSiN.